Just to really test the audio. On the count of three, my parents are afraid my dick's going to rot off. One, okay. Two, three. My parents are afraid my dick's going to rot off. Perfect.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else, and I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I felt. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Welcome back to Meet Me at Applebee's, your bad motherfucking podcast from three bad motherfucking towns.
Woo!
I am Brian, here as always, with Ashley and Rob. Folks, how we doing this week?
Oh, I'm living, buddy. Just had a bunch of family over the weekend at my house and... slowly turning back into a human after that.
Yeah, I can.
You know
imagine.
How it goes. Yeah. How about you, True Love?
I'm good. I went and did some NASCAR history nerd stuff all weekend.
You did do all kinds of shit this weekend.
Yeah, in North Carolina. So I'm here.
You went to our place without me. How dare you?
I went to our special Buffalo Wild Wings.
That's true. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get into that in a second. Brian, are you alive? Everything okay?
I'm here. It was a weekend, really pretty quiet. Not a whole lot to report here in Ohio. I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's the off season. You guys are doing stuff. I'm trying to plan holiday trips and all that stuff. So
yep.
Fun
times.
Is
it snowing?
No snow at the moment. It's been like in the 40s and 50s the last few days. So hopefully none of that.
Hell yeah.
Next few weeks. So. Yeah, but yeah, we're back again. We got a couple more episodes before the year is over with, and I guess we'll start off with some racing news. There was a lot of different NASCAR things that got announced this last week. I mean, today we had finally the Joe Gibbs Racing announcement.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, they just trauma dumped their entire lineup at once.
Oh, yeah, sorry, the levels were doing weird shit. Yeah, they finally announced all their team drivers. Sheldon Creed finally got announced in a normal way, so good for him.
Yeah. As did Eric Almirola.
Yep, that whole deal, and Joe Graff still paying for that ride.
Yeah, money talks, baby.
What does his dad do for a living? Anyone? No.
He pays for race cars.
Yeah, I have no idea.
That's all I know. That's a good question, actually. I don't really know what Joe Graff Sr. does.
Literally the only thing I know about Joe Graff.
He buys new frames.
No. Ryan Truex, he's getting some more spots in there, too, after his win last year, so good for him.
That's good.
Yeah. I think everyone's happy to see that. Definitely one of those guys I wasn't sure if any of that success would amount to anything.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see he's back for at least a little bit. Him and Eric can wrestle for... 10th place or whatever it is. So,
mm-hmm. Also in the news, Shane Van Gisbergen got announced as a full-time Cowlick driver. I know he's got the Trackhouse deal, but Trackhouse and colleagues seem to have some sort of alliance going. So he's going to be in that car because, you know, Trackhouse doesn't technically have their own Xfinity team. So that'll be good. He needs the experience running a full season in NASCAR on some level. So, hopefully this gets him up to speed. You know, unlike a lot of guys, I don't think he needs quite as much work as, you know, getting into a new series. But
certainly
it'll be good
not,
to see him.
And I think the biggest news of all, though, and my apologies to anyone we have skipped so far. Oh, did we talk about Chandler Smith? He's part of the Joe Gibbs.
Yeah, I mean, we did. It's
whatever.
Yeah. Taylor Gray and Swallow.
Oh, yeah, the Grays got signed.
How do you say that?
Swallowwitch.
Swallowwitch. Yeah,
your Snowball Derby attemptee. And now in the Xfinity Series or Trucks, whatever the fuck. Who cares? But really, I don't care because the big news of the week, of course, I know we're all so excited about this, the reinstatement of Cody Ware, NASCAR allowing him to come back and do whatever it is he does out there.
Or reliable caution. Yeah. Always.
Exactly. Yeah, not enough yellows coming out towards the end of a race these days, so they finally brought Cody back to fix the action.
You know, it's what's he gonna do, I guess, because he doesn't have a ride. His spot got filled by a much more qualified driver who hopefully gets pushed up to, maybe he'll have to wait for Haley to get pushed up to a Roush ride so he can get his seat back. But his folks got plenty of money. There's some NASCAR divisions in other countries now. Maybe he'll get to go to one of those.
I was saying to you guys, I think he's going to end up down in Brazil with old Matt DiBenedetto. That looks seems pretty reasonable.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
Yeah.
NASCAR Brazil.
I feel like Brett Moffat will get down there too. Maybe he's another one that nobody seems to like.
He can actually drive at least.
He can drive, but you know that doesn't mean people like him. That's the thing. And he doesn't have money too. If he had money, that'd be the other thing he'd need. So whatever.
Yeah, so like Brian said, not a whole lot going on. We're talking about fucking Cody Ware on here as the main news story. So.
Well, I mean, there was some other stuff going on. There was testing in Phoenix last week, and you know, I think the big news from there is the muffler issue, which to me isn't really much of an issue.
NASCAR brought those guys 2,000 miles to test mufflers for some reason.
Yeah, they didn't make any progress with the shifting. They didn't make any progress with the horsepower. Muffler talk was the biggest thing, and you know, and I will get, you know, obviously want to hear your guys' opinion, but I've been going to races for 30 something years. I don't give two shits about this.
I don't
like either. The cars are a tiny bit quieter. Does not bother me at all.
Yeah, I don't care. Don't care.
You know, I want to know who in the muffler industry is paying Michael Waltrip to go so hard for them.
Well, he was a Meineke guy at one point, wasn't he? Did he have Meineke? Or maybe, well, Napa sells mufflers. Maybe he still got them in his ear. But
yeah. Maybe.
Well, it wasn't just Mikey, because Mikey had that weird quote that sounded like it was straight out of a PR notebook. And Larson, too. I think when you hear the phrase mufflers will make the fan experience better, like, that is a coached phrase. Like, there is no way Larson would come up with that on his own. And same thing with Mikey.
I mean, he's starting his own series right now, so he's full-on PR mode, so maybe.
Full-on PR mode, but the fact that it wasn't even just those two guys. I think that was something that came out of the mouths of most of the drivers that were there, so I'm sure it was a talking point that NASCAR told those guys to talk about. Some fans seem to be getting upset. Like, again, it's this... they're taking away from the rumble of the cars, and you know, that's what you want to hear at the track. And again, it is a minor, minor difference. It's going to be one of those things that, A, helps the crew members.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's probably also maybe partially a tiny bit have to do with the Nashville deal.
Between that and Chicago. Out of all the things, all the changes that NASCAR needs to make, this is the one I can probably, like I said, I just don't care. It doesn't bother
nothing.
Me. Like,
yeah, it means nothing. So yeah, that the other thing, going to the fan experience deal, I guess. Joey Logano had a quote that called NASCAR fans spoiled because of the access that we get to fans compared to access we get to drivers and whatnot compared to other sports. And this is another thing that I guess I don't have too much of opinion on. I think when you compare NASCAR to other forms of motorsports, it's much, much more restricted.
You're not lining up at the hair club for men on a Thursday morning to meet Joey Logano and have him sign your your toupee?
I guess when we're talking about at the track, I mean, yeah, drivers still make a fair amount of appearances, but that... I think a lot of that went away with the sponsor stuff because there aren't as many consumer sponsors that are doing... those types of activations at different things. I don't know. I think at the track, it's like the guys are top level drivers. I don't expect them to be out signing autographs as soon as they get out of the car, like all day long. It's not incredibly difficult to get in the pits if you know what you're doing. I don't know. Like again, you can go to sprint car races or NHRA or whatever and go right up to the haulers and meet guys, and it'd be cool if that was possible in NASCAR, but it's not really feasible if you have 40,000 spectators there. So,
yeah, but then you're not everyone's getting into the garage either, so it is a little different. I don't want to go too hard on Joey here because it would take some effort for him Ooh, God forbid, to go out and meet some people. But yeah. I don't know, there's ways to do it. And I think Kyle Larson's a good example of that. Chase Elliott, when he goes out and once in a while when he races a midget or whatever he does, he does hang out too. There are drivers that actually put that effort forth. And it usually comes out of them racing in other series that aren't NASCAR. Of course, Penske's pretty tight on allowing any extracurricular activity. So that kind of eliminates that avenue. But to call everybody spoiled, I think, is a little much. It's a little rich.
I think for me, like, I have had the fortune of, you know, having a lot of hot passes over the past few years, and seeing it like up close in the pits, there are those fans. I don't know how they get those hot passes, but the second a driver like walks anywhere, they're like, it's a huge mob around them, like hounding them for autographs. And I think it's those fans in particular that probably wear on the drivers, because it's those autograph hounds in the pits are just relentless.
Yeah.
And it's while they're trying to like do their job too. So I don't know. It's like some people ruining it for the rest of us, I guess.
That's definitely true. And that's why I don't want to like, you know, go too scorched earth on Joey for saying that, because again, NASCAR fans, there is a level of access that doesn't exist. Like, it is possible for any one of us to end up in what is essentially the locker room, which is completely fucking impossible in other sports.
Yeah, for sure.
That will never happen anywhere else. But, you know, again, it's comparing motorsports to stick and ball sports is something that doesn't need to be done. And I think it happens too much across the board. But yeah, that said, like, I still think it's a big stretch to say that fans are spoiled with their access, because I've never seen Joey Logano at the racetrack. So.
Yeah, and
you probably weren't looking for him.
So. Oh, I'm gonna seek him out now.
And the other sad thing that has come out of this discussion is it made me agree with a Brett Griffin point.
Strange bedfellows. That's right.
Yeah, this is one of those. I mean, I got to give Brett some credit. I mean, clearly he must be good at something, because you don't get to where you're at and where he's at in motorsports without having some sort of skills.
Well, he's a marketing guy first and foremost, and management, and he's got a big hand in the Nutrien Act sponsorship in the sport. So yeah, he knows what he's talking about when it comes to sponsor activation, at least.
For sure. And he brought up the point, and this is, I don't know how many younger listeners we have, but something that was huge up until, you know, Winston Cup wasn't around, was the Winston Cup preview, which was this massive, massive show that happened every January or February. I mean, it was always a month or two before the start of the season in Charlotte, where all the teams would show up, and they do auctions, and they do meet and greets, and they do displays of all the cars and all sorts of shit. And, you know, that was something I always wanted to go to as a kid, never had the chance to, but that doesn't happen anymore. Like that.
No.
So, God, no. Right. Not happened for decades. So yeah, he has a good point. Like, there is stuff that isn't around anymore that was around when the sport was much bigger. So can some of that stuff come back? Maybe. It's up to NASCAR and the teams, really, but I feel like they've got other fish to fry, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't really say anything other than I agree with that opinion. I think NASCAR is unique in the way that all, again, not to make a stick and ball comparison, like I just said, is dumb, but I'm going to. There is no other sport where all the competitors are there at the same time. You know, like local NFL teams, whatever, they can do their own sort of like community outreach events. And I know that like NASCAR teams do that. They have open houses like the RCR one you went to, True Love. But again, they're all in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So there's no national activation or anything to get people to actually look at, preview the season and get to know the guys and see these cars and sort of set the whole scene up like other sports are fortunate enough to be able to have that opportunity to do, because they're spread across the country. So again, I don't know what the answer is. Do you televise it? How do you put it together? But honestly, there really isn't, and this is like a gripe towards the coverage of the sport. No one is putting together a package like that. And I personally would love to see something like that. And especially in a world where the media is so, there's so many ways to present these stories. I don't know why NASCAR doesn't put more of a focus on sharing those stories and like getting people ready for who's in the, like, watch one of these Formula One, season reviews from back in the day. or an IndyCar one. I think there's some Winston Cup ones too. But they start the season off, or the review off, with reviewing who's driving for who moved where, what happened. And it's all very just, it's quick, but it sets the tone for everything that's about to happen. And I feel like NASCAR coverage, especially at the Daytona 500, when a bunch of new fans are kind of peering in on it, or like the sort of fair weather or not every Sunday type watchers, they don't know what the fuck's going on, because the paint schemes change every week. There's different guys and different cars. The cars look different. And you're just kind of like thrown to the wolves, and the presentation is almost too dumb, and there's not enough information for people to really grasp onto. So I don't know. It's a weird situation, but yeah, all that to say, I agree with Brett. Something has to be done to sort of, you know, open the stanza, I guess, of what the NASCAR season is.
They're too busy pouring all their money into those cartoon drawings.
It's true. Yeah. Bring back Digger. Let him do it. Fuck.
I feel like this is a good time to transition into talk about the video that one of our favorites, Slapshoes, put out the other night. That boy, oh boy, if you are any sort of supporter of the chase or the playoff system, go watch this video.
Yeah.
I will say this is the first time I've ever watched the Slapshoes video. Like, I don't...
What?
Yeah, I don't watch YouTube.
Oh, you're missing out. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of shitty
YouTubers.
After
watching this video, this guy didn't do anything for me, so...
He's probably the first one that I ever got into. Like, before, there were tons of them. I don't know what the hell... I was, like, Googling NASCAR documentaries or just NASCAR videos on YouTube years ago, and he was the first I found, and he's always been the best. He went complete scorched earth on the nepotism and bad marketing decisions and the legitimacy of the sport, which he had some points that really difficult to argue against in that video.
I've never seen anyone lay them all out in such a succinct manner either, which is nice. It's all things that I think all of us have felt, at least, you know, to a certain degree. And there's a couple of things I didn't necessarily agree with in there. But as a whole, I've never seen anyone actually lay out all those points together and sort of give us the roadmap to how we got to where we are now and why you may be feeling alienated. Cause sometimes I'll flip shit on. I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, why am I annoyed? And this is why. So, but it's, I think the video is called NASCAR and the Dam of Legitimacy. It's definitely worth a listen. And if you don't have for all the newer fans who may be listening here, or even if you don't care about NASCAR and you just love to hear our beautiful voices. Cause I know there's a couple of you out there. Fucking weirdos, but but this is a nice little history lesson to show you sort of how things progressed from the 90s to where we are now and how the sport changed. But yeah, definitely I agree with the overall sentiment and pretty much all the major points he made. The only thing I wasn't totally on board with was his assertion that in the 90s and before the chase and all that, that fans didn't care about the championship so much. Because
I don't necessarily agree with that either.
Now the broadcasts, like the whole season, like portrayal by the broadcast team certainly wasn't focused around winning a championship. So that definitely has changed, but I would argue that fans definitely cared. I can tell you fucking Dale Earnhardt fans cared. And Richard Petty fans loved hoarding the 7-time thing over everybody. And Jeff Gordon's fans cared. So
For sure.
I definitely cared when Gordon and Tony Stewart were racking championships up because those were my guys. So it was cool. And I was very sad that Davey never got a chance to get a Winston Cup. So it did matter to the fans. But he is correct in that it wasn't quite the focal point of the coverage. And it wasn't like we're going towards the Super Bowl or anything like that.
Because we start with the Super Bowl.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, thinking back now to... I mean, we were all fans when this stuff was happening. I mean, I think when I was a kid, you know, the Kenseth season was, again, not a horrible season overall, but, I mean, yeah, the fact that he had the points lead the whole season was a little bit lackluster, but I think, to me, it made more sense to just make wins count a little bit more. Because back then, the point structure was you only got, like, 5 extra points for winning a race. You know, it wasn't really... I mean, yeah, obviously, you benefited from winning, but it wasn't, like, this thing where, you know, you were going to leap up five spots in the point standings, you know, with your, you know, competitors right behind you. It was just, it was one of those things where if they maybe changed that a little bit, they could have not gone the playoff route. And I also think now, in hindsight, you know, going to what late models are doing now, where cutting back off to just 10 guys for the last X amount of races, it's a new championship battle. Like, yeah, maybe they should just do that instead of this round by round system.
Yeah, I agree with that. And for those of you who don't know what Brian's talking about, the Lucas Oil late model series, of course, last year, I bitched about it on the show for about a month. They switched to a one race championship winner take all format at Eldora. And of course, that's Ricky Thornton Jr.'s probably weakest racetrack out of the, you know, 600 he goes to a year, where he wins pretty much everywhere else. Just can't get Eldora right, and lost the championship as a result of it. And people were pretty pissed about that, including a lot of the teams. And especially since, you know, what's going on between High Limit and World of Outlaws. There is also a World of Outlaws late model series. So Lucas Oil was very, very quick to adjust the championship to be a seven race chase between the top four drivers, starting at Knoxville. So even if they have a couple rainouts, there's still plenty of time to put your portfolio together for a championship. And honestly, that's a much better way to do it, in my opinion. If you go, if you have to try and like create drama out of having eliminations and all that, then that's the way to do it. A lot of drivers in NASCAR are saying they don't want to see a one race winner take all situation. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, kudos to the Lucas Oil late model folks for listening to their fans and their competitors and making a swift change instead of doing the Charlotte thing and just telling all the fans and people that they're actually wrong. Yep. And
just like the horsepower issue too. Yeah.
Nope, actually, you guys are all wrong. Believe it or not.
Let's see, what else do we have to bitch about here? I guess True Love went away for the weekend and did some NASCAR stuff. But before we get into that, I do want to mention one other news bit that came out over the weekend, or came out probably just after we recorded last week, but it was announced that Tony Stewart is going to step up to the Top Fuel ranks next year.
Yep.
Taking over his wife's ride as they try to start a family. Now, you know, I think this is Tony's matured quite a bit over the years. And, you know, I know for years he said he would never get married. Marrying a lifelong racer seems like a good fit. Much like Tony, Leah had her troubles with the law. I want to say like 10 years ago or something like that. She was arrested for like disorderly conduct somewhere. Couldn't get the full story on that, but it seems like maybe they really are a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
But I bring this up because this made me think back to an article that Rolling Stone put out about 15 years ago. Now,
the only worthwhile thing that magazine has ever printed.
This came out when I was in the midst of my lapsed fandom, and I remember reading it and being like, man, I think I kind of like Tony Stewart now. Now, if I read that through 2023, read this article through 2023 eyes, I don't necessarily know if I'd feel the same way, because here are some quotes from that if you guys don't remember. Just in case you wanted to know what makes Tony Stewart get up every morning, pussy, money, and race cars. It's pretty much all I care about.
Should be on a shirt.
The only thing Stewart enjoys more than a race car and a fight, it seems, is women. Over the course of a race weekend, he's approached by dozens of them, each more long-legged, doe-eyed, and blonde than the last. Inside the NASCAR bubble, these gals are called pit lizards.
Fuck yeah.
And they prowl the inner sanctum at tracks throughout the year. My parents are afraid my dick's gonna rot off, Stewart says. So again, lot's changed. A lot's changed in 15 years. And apparently he's still got it because, again,
did
they're trying
say
for a
that
family.
Or did his
he
parents actually his say that? Parents. Is what I want to know.
Who knows?
Tony, your dick's going to fall off.
Wasn't there a quote in there, too, about him checking to make sure they were 18?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. So they make a stop at an airport lounge, and Tony's flirting with some girls at the counter. He's asking them if they're 18, and they're like, why do you want to know that? Well, we ain't just flying up there, darling, he says, winking at me. we'll be taking pictures and hanging out and all sorts of stuff. And the girls are just kind of like, aw. So,
all again, sorts of stuff.
A lot has changed with Tony Stewart in 15 years.
If I was ever going to be a pit lizard, it would not be for Tony.
I mean, shit, I'm thinking about this now. I feel like this was right around the time he had the shit race. The shit race at Watkins Glen. So weird timing for all this. But yeah, good on them. Hopefully that, everything
goes well.
Maybe
that's what the
other
stuff is. They're going to be helping to clean him up on the plane. Extra set of hands never hurt anybody. So
good.
So yeah, that really is a fucking god tier article, though. I love it.
It's pretty great. Now, before we move on, I want to ask you guys. So, I don't think anyone in NASCAR would allow something like this to come out now. Not a chance.
No. But no. Even that roast that we watched a few weeks ago is beyond.
Maybe. But let's just say this article comes out this year. Who's the driver? Who do you pick? I mean, I guess right off the top of my head, first is Gregson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not anymore, though.
I was going to say. He had his incident, yeah.
The problem with Gregson is, yeah, I mean, he doesn't have the success to warrant this type of article. He's probably that personality. He is that personality. Let's leave it at that. But I have to say, probably Denny Hamlin, I think, would probably be the one.
Yeah.
Again, now that he's back with his baby mama, maybe not so much.
That
but I mean,
yeah, that didn't mean
maybe
anything
if they
the first
split
time.
Up again,
days.
Just give it a few months.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's anybody I can really think of really being that guy. It'd be funny if it was Joey Logano, though. Can you imagine him saying that shit?
Oh man.
My wife says my dick's gonna fall off. That's not what Joey.
Hot ass wife.
Yeah. That's not what Joey's voice sounds like, but
that's more like Mikey's voice.
Yeah,
yeah. The thing is, like, more nasally.
Don't get it twisted. That shit still happens, still exists. These dudes are still dogs. It is what it is. But like, yeah, just I can't imagine who it would be. Maybe Martin Truex now. I don't know, but he likes to fish.
He's already shacked up.
Yeah,
he likes to fish.
He does. Yeah, I guess I got to go with Denny Hamlin on that one. That's well documented.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well.
Great question, Brian.
I think with that, we'll end the blue part of the show. And Ashley, let's talk about your weekend. You went back
Charlotte.
Up. Yep, went back up to Charlotte. Talk about it.
Okay.
Well, this ties into
y'all are done bitching.
I think so. Well, this does tie into some more bitching we have to do since you did go to the Winston Cup Museum. We'll get to that in a little bit. There's a whole lot of drama with that, between them and the Winston folks still coming after that guy over that Stapleton video. But we'll get there. So yeah, take it away, true love.
Me and Andy went up to Winston-Salem. Not Andy Newsom, not that Andy. He was taking pictures of race cars.
Yeah, this drift Andy, right?
Different Andy, yeah, drifting Andy. We went up to Winston-Salem because, you know, the museum's closing this coming Saturday. So if you haven't been by now, this is your last week, so... I think they're having like a big cruise in and shit. So
that's cool. If Winston will let them, yeah, big tobacco like blockade.
Just shut it down. But yeah, I'd never been to that museum before, so I wanted to see it before it all gets auctioned off next month at Mecum. But neither one of y'all have been, right?
Never got a chance to go. No.
Yeah. Well, now you never will.
Yeah. I watched the videos, I guess. But how is that place, honestly? I've heard it's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It's definitely smaller than I thought going into it, but it was still worth the trip. Like, car-wise, I should have counted how many cars were in there. maybe 20, 25.
Yeah.
But
this is your first time going, right?
Yeah, it was my first time going. I feel like I spent more time looking at all the pictures on the walls and like shit, yeah, because it was there were a lot of pictures in there that I had never seen before.
Yeah.
But definitely my favorite car in there. They had Wendell Scott's his car from the 1973 Talladega race that he wrecked. And for like decades, it had sat in his yard, like rusting. But the entire left side of it was sheared off in the accident, and he got some injuries or whatever. But so that car is sitting in there, like rusted out as fuck, like half wrecked. And while we were standing there looking at that car, this lady comes up and starts talking to us because she could tell that we were, you know, pretty interested in that one. And it turns out that her dad was a guy named Ray Arnold, and he served on Wendell's pit crew for like 15 years or something.
No shit.
So yeah, she said that she had never been to the museum and she wanted to come see that car before it shut down because she remembers growing up being a little girl and seeing that car just in Wendell's yard for all those years.
Oh man,
so,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so she talked to us for a while, like sharing stories about her dad and like all kinds of stuff. So that was like worth the whole trip for me, just standing there hearing her stories.
That's killer. Mm-hmm. I love to hear that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. There was another guy that wandered in at one point who was very loud and...
It's Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart looking for pussy.
It was a tiny old little black man who had like fur on and a hat, and he was shouting about the coat that he was wearing. He said, "I had to go all the way to Alaska to get this coat."
Hell yeah.
And I looked at the tag and it says "Made in China." And he was just spouting off stories, but like they were all kind of all over the place. But I think he might have had something to do with Wendell Scott too, but he was pretty out there. But it seems like they've had a lot of like people in the industry coming in randomly lately and just like checking it out, showing their support one last time and like sharing stories and stuff. So
that's cool.
It was definitely an environment of like people just standing around swapping stories, and there were a lot of people in there.
Nice.
So
that's cool. That's about the only NASCAR related thing in Winston-Salem anymore, right? I don't think there's anything else, right?
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, that's about it. But, and they also had some of like Ralph Seagraves stuff, like some of his like cool belt buckles and belts and a pair of Winston cowboy boots that were his. And
that's cool.
Like a slideshow of a bunch of pictures of him throughout his career working with NASCAR. So a lot of amazing stuff.
I know they got that left right car in there, the original road course car they tried to test. At least I'd seen that was in the collection anyway, from back in the 80s. So that's cool.
I don't know.
It's nothing to look at. It's just a fucking blank looking like Oldsmobile body or something like that. So
if you didn't know
what you were looking for, you probably wouldn't even notice it. But yeah.
And they also have one of my least favorite cars ever, the Davey Allison Ford that's actually a 97 Ford body. Like, I know it's already on the auction site, but I've seen that in there, and it upsets me every time I look at it.
That's fair.
Yeah, there was a Davey Allison car in there, and it just said it was a tribute car, so...
Yeah, that's the one. That's fucking that car.
Yeah, I mean, they had, you know, Bobby Labonte, Jeff Gordon, Bill Elliott, Kyle Petty, Richard Dale. Some random stuff. I did watch a little bit of that Stapleton video before we went, and honestly, I think I'd rather have looked through the warehouse where they're hiding a bunch more cars.
That might be where that one I was talking about is hanging out at.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool just to, you know, see that shit before it's all gone.
So is that true that it's actually going to Mecum Auctions? That's who's handling it?
Yeah, the auction's already up.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I got to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's only got...
I'm going to buy something, you know?
It's only got cars on it now. Like, I don't know exactly what's... Especially, like, the smaller stuff and fire suits, all that shit. But it has at least a dozen cars up there now.
That's cool.
Like that.
I will also say that every single fire suit that they had on display in there was all like sun faded as shit. So I don't know where they've been storing this stuff, but
just out back on top of some crates.
It all looks like Mike Harmon's fire suits.
Yeah.
Been through hell.
And that's where he gets them from. Goes out of the museum and picks up some oldies and
yeah. But I mean, I'm sure some of it will go, like, if some of it's like on loan or whatever, it'll go back to the families or
yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's a damn shame to hear that place is actually closing. It sounded like there was a glimmer of hope for a little bit, but
yeah. I'm sure this Saturday will be huge.
Yeah.
One less place it's one less place for people to tag Junior to save.
That's true. Yeah.
Poor guy. I mean, fuck me.
He's got enough to do already. Yeah. For fuck's sake.
Well, he is the Jesus. He's the savior. So. He is.
That's not the only museum you went to, though, right? You went down to the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So after we left that museum, we drove by the Days of Thunder Barn because Andy had never seen it before.
Oh, yeah.
Then we went and got dinner at Lancaster's Barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all been there? Yeah. That's one of my favorite spots. Just food's good, but also there's so much cool shit in there.
Racing shit
restaurant.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where they get this stuff, but it's everywhere.
It's like a good Applebee's.
Yes, meet me at Lancaster's.
We maybe they'd sponsor us if we changed the name of the show to that. But
maybe. They might. And then, yeah, Sunday we spent all day at the NASCAR Hall of Fame because he'd never been there either. So I know when me and Rob went last year, the whole, like, main part when you first walk in, it was all that collection that Junior had put together.
Yeah. What's in there now? Yeah.
Well, now it's like a 75th anniversary celebration, so it's like the beginning of NASCAR till now. So they had like Glenwood, they had the Dodge Daytona that Buddy Baker broke the 200-mile-per-hour barrier in.
Oh shit. Oh, that's awesome.
Donnie Allison, Bobby Allison, they had Austin Cindric's Daytona car in there. A Curtis Turner convertible. They had a Jerry Cook modified in there, which looked
rad. Now we're talking.
They had a number 2 Wrangler car from when Dale raced for Osterlund. And they had Bubba's truck when he won Martinsville in 2014.
Oh, the baby Wendell's, blue one? Yeah.
Yeah. And they also had a Josh Berry late model in there, which is cool to see in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. They also had a little poster up, little Ken Squire memorial.
Oh, that's good.
As you enter the rotunda upstairs where they put all the recent inductees in.
Yeah.
So I try to go at least once a year to see the new inductee exhibit since they swap that out every year and they're about to swap it out again next year.
That's the coolest part of the whole museum for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because in that part, they put, like, they'll have a car representing whoever, and then they'll have that glass case. And that glass case of, like, random knickknacks.
Dude, yeah, it's so much cool shit.
It's always my favorite, yeah.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to see Mike Stefanik's exhibit in there. I think that was when we went, I believe.
Yeah.
And then I've seen Mark Martin's in there as well. That's always the best. So many this crazy little pieces of history there. I want to say Ray Evernham, when he was inducted, I went that year too.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like a spark plug from Jeff Gordon's car from when they won the Brickyard 400. And I stopped and stared at the thing for like 25 minutes. Yeah. But just because, again, like, what's one of those things where, like, even when you go to the racetrack and you see it in person, you kind of, you know the deal. This stuff, at least I know for the three of us, looms very large in our childhoods, and it's still very much larger than life. And to actually see a piece from a very, like, because the Brickyard 400 for me was a big deal. I remember taping that race, you know, on VHS and all that shit, being so excited for it. And to see like a physical piece of that win, like right in front of you, it really kind of brings it together that these are real people doing something that's actually very real. And it really, at least for me anyway, maybe I'm just a weirdo, but it caused me to take pause and have the chills for a few minutes. So,
yeah,
love that place.
In Kenseth's little case, they had a full mannequin from the Nextel robot commercials that he did.
Really?
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so creepy because it was so spot on and like lifelike. And I was waiting for that thing to start moving any second. I don't know where they've been storing that thing, but they had a full mannequin of him inside of it.
They have a piece of Joey Logano's car in there?
No, they should.
Wish they did.
Yeah. They also had a 10-year-old bottle, full bottle of Gatorade in his case for some reason.
Hell yeah.
And some of his marathon medals. And then Herschel McGriff. Most of his stuff was from the 1950 Mexican road race that he won. And then Shelmer Dean had a bunch of cool stuff from the early Wrangler years with Dale. There was a pair of knee pads that he used when he was on the pit crew that he made himself out of multiple layers of old denim.
Nice.
And there was a couple t-shirts in there too from Junkyard Dogs and Flying Aces from like pit crew championship competitions that I had never seen before. So
I have one of the Flying Aces ones, but I just actually saw one on eBay the other day from, must have been from 88, that I'd never seen before, but I was not spending $200 on it.
No. Yeah. Yeah, no. This was from the pit crew competition that they won in 88, so.
Must be the same one.
Yeah. But yeah, we spent the whole day in there from open till the doors were locking.
Did you guys do the little pit stop competition thing?
No. I'm too busy looking at old stuff.
Yeah. How long were you?
I don't think I've ever done any of that like interactive stuff.
No. I've done the iRacing thing, and I definitely have sat in the sim a few times.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my wife. The first time I ever went to, my wife just left me there. And then her and my sister-in-law went off and as they do, you know.
They went to the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, no, it was still just me. But how long were you guys in Buffalo Wild Wings? How many visits? Was that a lunch, dinner thing? Were they open for breakfast?
Just dinner. We had lunch at the little pit stop cafe that's inside the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A little quick bite.
Nice. That is a good B-dubs.
Yeah. It was solid.
Yeah, I was very hungover when we were there.
Time. Oh, yeah. God.
See, we were dying when we were in there last time.
Literally dying. All three of us were just staring off in opposite
together.
Directions of space. Yeah.
Before we went back to the Thirsty Beaver. But yeah, that's awesome, man. Did you guys go to the Beaver? Anything else in Charlotte that was worth noting? Or?
No, we drove straight back to Georgia after the Hall of Fame, so it was kind of a quick museum-only in-and-out trip.
Nice.
Yeah. But.
Well, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, one more thing that I thought was kind of... They always have a display case from, like, I don't know what floor it's on, 2 or 3, but it'll be, like, big, like, moments from the season before. So it was 2022 stuff in this one.
Yeah.
But inside of it, they had a bunch of cool stuff in there. But they also had a Coy Gibbs memorial pamphlet from his, like, funeral.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was, like, okay. I guess you could stick that in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Forgot about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like next to Suarez's taco pinata and
I mean, I guess where do you place that or something like that in the case, you know?
Yeah.
There's no good place for it.
No.
Or respectful place that is.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I understand having something for him, but like a straight up brochure from his funeral. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's brutal. Did you guys buy any cool diecasts in the
nope. No, the gift shop was closed. Like we were, it was like they
last
closed
one's
at
out.
5.
Yeah,
4:49. They're like setting up some fancy banquet dinner in the main big room there, like a Christmas party or something. I don't know.
Sick. They were, yeah. Well, that's cool. A trip to the Hall of Fame is always a good time.
Yeah. I'll get back next year because I really had to rush like that last floor because they were closing the doors. So
yeah,
after they switch out the new ones, man, Jimmy Johnson,
you must really go over everything with a fine tooth comb. Because I went once, and I mean, I would like to go again, but I feel like I saw enough the full day there.
Yeah, well, there's just so much in there. And it was Andy's first time ever going, and me and him both move at the same pace where we were really getting in.
Yeah.
See,
everything.
I went to the RCR Museum before the Hall of Fame, and I thought the RCR Museum was way better, even though it was only based on one team.
I tend to agree, but yeah, I like the Hall of Fame because it's laid out in such a way to where if you have never heard of NASCAR before, it's still an engaging visit.
Yeah,
but if you really want to dig in and like take a good look at those cases, you can do exactly what True Love did and what I've done before, where it's just like not even make it to the top floor with enough time.
Yeah,
it is possible to do that there.
And there's just so much rare stuff in there.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, well, on to that, I guess. Is there any other last notes from the trip you want to talk about?
I mean, that's basically all we did. Just nerd stuff.
Is that the last year nerd activity for the year?
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of racing museums that he hasn't been to that we're wanting to check off the list, but, you know, holiday hours are coming up, so.
Exactly. Yeah, open on Thursday from 11 to 11:45.
11 till lunch. Yeah,
exactly.
By appointment,
One I have not gone to that I want to check out is the Mike Curb Museum.
Yeah, that one's that.
Up in Welcome.
They just open whenever the hell they want to open, and they don't tell anyone either.
Oh, I know. I've tried to go twice, and it's complete crap. Sorry, not in Welcome. It's in Kannapolis, but that one looks cool as shit from the outside anyway.
The Petty one's there, too, and they have really weird hours, but the good thing is it seems like Richard's there half the time, so...
Yeah, you know, we wanted to go to that one, but they are closed on the weekends, which makes no sense.
Well, they're racing.
He's out there.
Yeah, theoretically.
King Richard's out there polishing Thad Moffitt's car, getting it ready for whatever ARCA fucking Northwest competition they're going to do.
Well, no, they just announced there's going to be some new Petty team with Thad.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, no, it's a truck team.
It's a truck team? I missed that.
It's a truck team.
I just heard it was starting something and I figured it was some part-time it's 12th place ARCA car.
It's a truck team and he's the 46. So it's a the new number into the fold, even though the 45 didn't really unfortunately accomplish much. You know, he's technically a Petty but also technically not a Petty. So I guess that's why he gets his new number.
How the Dillons are technically Childress.
Yeah, more or less.
By proxy. Petty by proxy.
Mm-hmm. Petty by proxy should be the name of the team.
By proxy motorsports. It's a 43 with an asterisk next to it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I forgot about that. The other big news of the week, of course, Thad Moffitt getting his truck ride. Which, again, I just learned it was a truck ride. So that's how little I care at this moment.
Well, I think all of the...
This is my first time hearing any of this. So.
Yeah.
Well, the announcement of the announcement was a bigger announcement than the actual announcement, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
But unlike... but at least it was an actual announcement, unlike all of the Gibbs announcements.
Yeah. All right, we gotta go get on to these next couple segments here. We've been going.
Just shoot the shit, baby. It's all good. It's the holidays.
do we want to talk about the what introed the show this week? I guess Rob, you got a note here about it.
Mm-hmm.
What introed the show this week?
What do you mean? What introed the show?
We already, Brian. So you tell us about it.
Oh yeah. Well, we'll talk about short track stuff real quick, and we'll lead into Uncle Kenny because he actually is running up in Gateway this weekend. The only real big short track thing happening from now till the end of the year, excluding the Tulsa Shootout. But that's I don't know. That's fucking technically January to me. Doesn't matter if it's the last weekend of December. That's January as far as my brain's concerned. But, of course, the giant, the Gateway Nationals happening in St. Louis this weekend. I think there's over 140 dirt late models on the entry list. About as many modifieds as well. Pick a name out of a hat who's big time. Basically, I think Scott Blomquist might be the only guy who's not running out of anyone you might guess. The whole world is there right now. Our good buddy Kyle Armstrong is going to be there to take it all in, so I'll share whatever news he passes along my way. But that's going to be on Flow Racing starting Thursday night, so tonight all the way through the weekend. Always a fun show, and it's where Tyler Carpenter usually shines and gives us something to laugh at, so I'm looking forward to that. But like I said, Kenny Wallace is running, and I think everyone loves that. He won that B main last year and made it into the main event on Saturday night at the Gateway Dirt Nationals. And the place went fucking nuts. He was like quoting a Nelly song in Victory Lane. Just like, it was killer. Nobody wanted to see that. aside from Kenny Wallace, more than the fans inside that dome. I was screaming in my house. Everyone was excited about it. And Kenny is definitely fired up because on Instagram, with no prompt whatsoever, he logs on with this shit-eating grin and says, "I'm a bad motherfucker from a bad fucking town." Baby.
Rob and I know both watched that video hundreds of times.
It's brought me such joy over the past week. But yeah, I don't know what that was about. Honestly, he's talking about like maybe about the cocaine with Kenny show being a thing at some point. Perhaps that was episode one. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. But my boy's fired up to go in there and drive that thing through the alphabet soup.
His wife has to hear him say that every time after they get it on. He just
walks
around the bedroom.
Our Dwarf of the Week also comes from that Instagram post. It was a guy, his account name is MJC Flint, and he says, "Such language on a Sunday morning. Try church." Because, again, this was Sunday morning at like 8 a.m. He's just firing this shit out in the world. So if you're not ready for that, I guess I understand. So
Kenny, I was looking at his YouTube page real quick, and there's a video that's just titled "Let's Talk About Poop." I don't know what's going on there. Between that and Denny talking about he's talking about wiping with his other hand on Dale Jr.'s podcast. Just too much.
Apparently he's been getting poo all over his hands. Ever shoulder since surgery.
Yeah, everyone getting shoulder surgery in the off season. What are these guys doing?
I don't know. I hope Chase is having better luck wiping his ass than Denny is.
Yeah. Oh, choking my beer.
Oh boy.
But yeah, that's about it for short track world. All the high limit drama's happening now. They're getting even more full timers to be committed. One thing of note that kind of ties back into the NASCAR world, the high limit series, of course, that's Kyle Larson and Brad Sweet's competing 410 sprint car series to the World of Outlaws. They are gonna have charters. And there's going to be revenue share tied to these charters. Now, it's not quite the same as a NASCAR charter. You're not guaranteed a spot in any races. However, you can't lease your charter. That was the other big deal. So, say KKR can't just lease one out to whoever to have a spot at the revenue sharing or a shot at revenue share and all that. But at least 50% of the take from streaming and whatever television rights come in the future will go to the teams that have these charters. And there's like a way they're going to cascade and grow it over the years. So definitely some forward thinking that hasn't really been seen too much in the short track world before as far as the team owner standpoint is concerned. And it's worked because they now have 13 full-time teams confirmed. And I think the World of Outlaws have like 8. So interesting times in that world, and a lot of shit talk. As usual, dirt fans are mad, happy, ecstatic, and neither all at the same time. But I guess we'll see how it all pans out next year. But yeah, interesting shit there to see that they're taking that element and moving it into the dirt world, the charters, that is.
Sprint car racing, it seems like it's a pretty big investment with not as much revenue options or revenue streams is like, you know, NASCAR, bigger sports. So I guess, again, if you can get somewhat of a return on that, good on them. You know, it's really no issue there on my end.
Yeah, I
they're
agree.
Not going to cost $40 million.
No, God, no. Yeah. But it's certainly a good move for them to try and get people to commit to their series full time. Again, 13 full time entrants. Parker Price Miller announced today. So he's number 13 going full time there. So not one of the biggest names they have just yet, but the law firm coming over, he's always there. Parker Price Miller, he's always racing somewhere, so to have him commit is pretty cool. The other thing is that High Limit is not going to limit their drivers from World of Outlaws shows. They can race as many as they want as long as they're still showing up and doing the full High Limit schedule. So that's not quite as harsh as the Outlaws, and they're, you know, you get to pick four and that's it. And they seem to be pretty respectful for the major events that are on the Outlaw schedule. So we'll see if World Racing Group responds. And also good news for racing fans, at least for the ones that are happy with pricing right now. Neither Flow Racing nor Dirt Vision have raised their prices as a result of this yet. So
that's good.
We'll see if that happens. But if anything, it'll make Dirt Vision go down. But yeah, I guess we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm just here. I'm just here for the drama. So. Yeah.
All right, and now we're gonna go on to the video of the week segment. Now, I chose what turned out to be Shirley Muldowney's last race as our video of the week, and I thought there was gonna be a little bit more biographical stuff in there, but I think overall it was still a pretty fun watch. You know, Shirley was the, she's not the winningest drag racer of all time, or winningest female drag racer of all time, but she was the first, which is very important.
Yep.
You know, three-time champion, many, many wins. This was her 147th Top Fuel race, which, you know, back then there were years when they were only running, you know, 10 races a year, which she mentions. But Shirley's a badass and definitely wanted to just get her on the show in some way. Really, I mean, we're not going to go through, you know, round by round as to what happens in this video because it's boring. Who cares? But I did have some notes, you know, aside from just talking about Shirley. A lot of the Coletta family is in this video, just because Connie Coletta was one of the first people to also welcome her in. You know, there were three different drivers, I think, that had to basically sign her license to get into the NHRA, and Connie Coletta was one of those. You know, he had a couple sons that raced. One of them unfortunately passed away in 2008. That was Scott Coletta in a really bad, funny car accident, but
he's the big reason they shortened the distance from a quarter mile to 1,000 feet.
Yeah, that was, I was going to get into that later on. But yeah, Connie looks fucking batshit crazy. like a lot of insight here, but he's got a really bad lazy eye that is just looking all over the room with that thing. But there's some talking heads, some different people talking about Shirley, and you know, it's mentioned that it was very difficult at first for Shirley to be accepted into drag racing, which unfortunately is something that I think pretty much any woman that's ever stepped in a race car has had to deal with. What's different about Shirley and drag racing in general is that there have been a lot of female winners. I mean, again, Shirley obviously was the first, but you know, there's hundreds of NHRA wins from different women over the years.
Yeah, drag racing seems to be a place where that sort of integration was never really an issue. Like, almost from the very beginning, there seemed to be women competitors, or at least a lot longer than other sports, that's for sure.
And I don't know if it's necessarily longer, because, Shirley was only a couple years before Janet Guthrie, and Janet Guthrie was already racing sports cars then. I think what's different here compared to basically every other form of motorsport is, I think it's, at least my theory is, that because Shirley broke that barrier, that allowed that stigma of women in the race cars to go away. I mean, again, it shouldn't be a stigma. It's just, you know, ridiculous male chauvinism, but because she was the first, that allowed so many other women to get through that door. It's kind of like, you know, the color barrier, that type of deal.
Sure.
I don't know if that's necessarily why there haven't been as many women in other forms of racing, but I feel like it's a fairly good theory. I mean, if you want to talk about what's different about the actual sports themselves comparing drag racing to any other form of motorsports? I mean, yeah, it's a much shorter race, obviously, and the skills involved are, like, the skill set's a completely different skill set than any other form. But you are basically driving balls of fire for 5 seconds. Yeah. And, you know, it is one of the scariest and most dangerous forms of motorsports there is.
Yeah, it's the bull riding of the motorsports world, no question.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how safe you make those things, they can still fucking explode. And yeah. No other race car does that. And even in this video, I mean, Shirley only makes it to the second round, but she still had better reaction times than most of the guys. I mean, she lost her final round, but still beat the other guy off the line by, you know, 600ths of a second, which is a lot when it comes to reaction time. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting video overall. Now, there's a lot of behind the scenes insight with her crew, specifically her clutch specialist, Donnie Couch. They have like a microphone on him throughout the day, and he's kind of providing different quips and talking about what he's doing to the car and talking about how they were having some problems with the clutch. And I thought it was kind of entertaining, and also he had a very 2000s look. The sunglasses are just like as dated as you can get with these things. Let's see here. Where are my notes? One thing I noted, which I don't know why I found it weird, but it's 2003 and she still had a 3 sticker on her car. Again, paying tribute to Dale, but yeah, she had that.
She had it on her uniform too.
I part of me feels like that's due to the association with Action. You know, Action Racing Collectibles really did Dale's stuff, you know, better than anybody else ever did. And Action kind of absorbed Chase, you know, which was First Sports Image, which was Dale's, you know, T-shirt company. Yeah. So they had a relationship there. So I guess to me, that's why that sticks out. I don't know if that's the actual story, but one thing I just noticed. Obviously, there's going to be some John Force footage and some brief but great footage. I would say there's two things here. John goes into this race. It's the worst, with the worst injury of his career that happened when he dropped a trophy in his garage and got 40 stitches in his hand. That's the worst injury of his career.
It's fucking nuts.
And he's still out there racing.
It's fucking insane, man.
His hands wrapped up. Apparently the doctor was like cutting stitches out of his hands with pliers before.
With
he
Mac
went
Tools
out.
Pliers. Had to get
had
that
to
line
be.
In there.
Of course it was.
And then later on, he ends up, I forget which round, I don't know if it's the second or third round, he ends up red lighting and you know, he's out of the race. So they interview him afterwards, and he's all confused. He's like, he's pissed at himself because he red-lighted.
He's always confused, though.
He's always confused, never knows what's going on. And then he asks the interviewer, he's like, what did I run? And he tells him, and he's like, that sucks. You got any good news for me? Just even the couple seconds he's on the screen, he's just an absolute
he's
gem.
He's always so frantic. And why is he so dirty? He's filthy in these.
Yeah, he is far dirtier than any other driver. He always has been. Let's see here. Some other things. Kenny Bernstein's there now. At this point in 2003, Kenny had already retired from full-time competition, but he was still out there driving, and he was like late 50s here, and he's got frosted tips. I don't know if that's a Budweiser thing, and he's trying to keep up
like
with Junior at the time. But yeah, he definitely
how
had
men
frosted
looked
tips
in that at that time. That's what it was.
We see Jim Head running in the drags, you know, Top Fuel field. And I've had a lot of Jim Head shirts throughout the years and great euphemisms on those things.
Yeah.
Let's see here. There's going back to what Rob mentioned before. Again, this was before the Scott Kalita wreck and when they were still running full quarter miles. You know, in 30 years of competition, they went from running 247 miles an hour to 333 miles an hour. Yeah. And I looked before the show, and they're still in the 330s, even at 1,000 feet.
Yes. Yeah, it hasn't slowed down, I can tell you that.
Absolutely batshit insane. I wonder if we'll ever see like a 400-mile-an-hour run before we're dead. Who knows?
I mean, I feel like it's probably possible if they had kept it to a quarter mile with these cars being as fast as they are, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It is absolutely batshit insane to see that. The only time I've only gone to one NHRA event, it was up here at Epping at the New England Dragway, and it was kind of a shit day. It was cold. A lot of people were having trouble with that, and there's like a lot of people just did not make good runs or stalled on the line or whatever it was. But I think still the fastest run of the day, which everyone was complaining how slow it was still like fucking 326 miles an hour or some crazy shit like that.
Yeah.
Wild to see in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't personally watch a ton of drag racing. You know, I did work at a drag racing shop once, and I've been to an NHRA race before, but I still don't watch much of it. And this was kind of an abbreviated race, but I was far more entertained than I thought I was going to be. And, you know, the drivers got a lot squirrelier than I guess I'd remembered one of the last times I watched. I mean, everybody's either, you know, getting sideways halfway through the run, or yeah, people are red lighting.
Shirley had a couple wacky runs.
Yeah, exactly. So not that I'm going to start watching tons of races, but I put them on sometimes. Like if nothing's going on, I'm working around the house and oh, there's some racing on, it's drag racing, I'll just put it on to have it in the background.
It usually comes on after NASCAR, before NASCAR, yep, or whatever. And yeah, it's always worth having on the TV.
Mm-hmm. We see an appearance from Linda Vaughn, who, you know, obviously long time drag racing supporter and worked with all sorts of different teams and Hurst and all that stuff. So she had to be there for Shirley's last race.
Yeah, that was obviously my favorite part of the video.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you read Linda's Vaughn, if you read Linda's book, she talks about her friendship with Shirley in there a lot. She was at her first pass and her last. So
yeah. Yeah. You know, Shirley had a lot of good quotes. You know, again, she talked about all the resistance that she got throughout the years, especially at the beginning, not so much once she started, you know, winning, but at the beginning she got lots of resistance. But, you know, again, when you start showing up, like she said, you know, there was one year she ended up in a 10 race season in 7 final rounds, which is pretty badass. I mean, you know, not many drivers were doing that. And yeah, she said the best revenge was winning, and she won quite a bit. So, it's something that a lot of women in race cars, they haven't known that. And hopefully it changes over the years. I mean, there should be more diversity and there should be more women in every type of racing series, but you know, drag racing, it's like Rob said, that barrier just isn't there anymore. We see Doug Coletta going back to the Colettas driving the Kiss Dragster. There are a bunch of wacky sponsors throughout the years, but Kiss is probably right up there with one of the weirdest, to me at least. Let's see, she's packing her own chutes, which again, she's 60 years old here, and I think she kind of looks like Susan Sarandon a bit in this video, and I also looked at, she's 83 now and still around, still going to races, and she looks great for an 83-year-old woman. Like, you wouldn't think she's that old.
Yeah.
In her younger days, she kind of reminded me of Joan Jett a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. There's some kind of funny drama here with the drag racing side, or not drag racing, the funny car side of things. So, Tony Pedrick, like, I think at this point in the season, you know, again, this is the last race of the year, but the championships have all been wrapped up. Like, Larry Dixon won Top Fuel. Tony Pedregon won Funny Cars. And the drama here is Tony Pedregon, like, it wasn't yet announced that he was leaving John Force Racing. John Force alludes to it, and Tony and his brother Cruz refuse to actually talk about it for whatever reason. But after this race, I think a few days later, they announced they were like starting Pedregon Racing. So just kind of weird, I guess, to, you know, that kind of announcement was so hidden. Again, I don't know all the backstory behind the drama, but
right.
Interesting to see that drama on screen. Going back to Shirley's run, again, she's eliminated in the second round to Corey McLenathan. And after that pass, You see both of them get out of the car. Corey goes over to approach Shirley, and soon as they meet, how does it feel to be the bad guy comes out of Shirley's mouth. And he didn't want to do it. He even told us, like, I didn't want to be the one to beat you, because nobody did. I mean, I think no matter what, you know, as a competitor, you want to win. But when someone like that is, you know, ending their career, even as a driver, you almost turn into a fan. You want to see them go out and get, you know, one last bit of success. So
exactly. Yeah.
Powerade, the series sponsor, presented her with her own two personal cases of pink Powerade, which apparently that wasn't ever made. So the only two in existence were in honor of her. I thought that was just a really funny thing to announce. There is, unfortunately, there aren't any commercials in this broadcast aside from one that they kept in, a Powerade branded NHRA Tactics and Strategies commercial, and it's John Force. What is your secret to winning? Don't turn. That's it. That's the whole commercial. So got a huge kick out of that. And I think my final real note here is, after the race, Shirley is slowly making her way back up the exit ramp, back into the pits, and all the fans are cheering for her and whatnot. And the announcer makes, he really could have phrased this better, one more taste of Shirley Muldowney. Just really, so many other ways you could have phrased that, man. Just so many other ways.
It is what it is, you know.
And this video doesn't even show the final rounds for whatever reason. I mean, yeah, because it was about Shirley more than anything else. But overall, fun watch. Not necessarily the documentary type info that I was looking for, but I still don't regret watching it.
Pretty standard NHRA broadcast. It's always fun. So.
Yeah, I mean, this, again, for someone who's never really been a huge drag racing fan, it's kind of like golf. Once in a while, like, I've never been a huge golf fan either, but once in a while you'll catch something and it's like, oh, this is actually kind of entertaining. And I don't know, maybe the personalities of the drivers or what, but just, I liked a lot in this video, even though it wasn't the most exciting video.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Shirley Muldowney's actually been, I wouldn't say in the news up here, but sort of been talked about in the racing online sphere. Because of her continual sort of snubbing by the New England Racing Hall of Fame, which is a bummer because she should be in there. There's a lot of guys. I mean, not saying that anyone who's in there shouldn't be in there, but the fact that she hasn't been included, she is from Vermont. That's firmly within New England. And the fact that she hasn't been included is kind of a shame, in my opinion. She's 83 years old. You know, as good a shape she seems to be in, you know, there's not a lot of life left for somebody at that age. So I would hope that they get her in that Hall of Fame so she can enjoy the honor while she's still with it and alive, for that matter. So I don't think anybody from that committee would ever listen to the show, but if it happens to make it there, I'd like to count my voice as one more in support of her being in that Hall of Fame, because she absolutely deserves to be there.
Yeah. Any possible award or, again, Hall of Fame that she's eligible for, she should be in. No doubt about it.
Yep, I agree.
Trulove, as the lady on the show, any final thoughts
about
Shirley?
You always put this pressure on me as the only female. And
look, we're talking about women on the show. Right? You know, y'all.
That's not my fault.
It's not my fault either. Yeah, I mean, I admittedly don't know a ton about drag racing. I went to one NHRA event at Atlanta Dragway when I was like a teenager. Yeah. And it's always one of those, you know, on in the background. My dad used to watch a lot. Like, but really, John Force is the extent of my drag racing interests over the years. So it was kind of a learning for me. I mean, honestly, like I said, most of the stuff that I know about Shirley has come via Linda Vaughn and their friendship. So
yeah,
there's actually one other thing too. Now that I just thought of it. So she had, we talked about this in the last show, but she had her own movie made about her, Heart Like a Wheel. Yep. And turns out she didn't really like the movie. I'm going to pull up the quote here.
She didn't like the actress that played her.
Yeah, she didn't like the actress, and she didn't like the way some of her story was told, but because she knew it was good for the sport, she was okay with it. But she's like, the quote was, the movie did not capture my life very well at all, but more importantly, I thought it was very good for the sport. So yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that she didn't like that the girl that played her, like, when she climbed in and out of the car, she said it looked like she was getting up from the dinner table.
Yep, and the girl apparently didn't even like racing and talked about that to the media, which is a weird thing to do when you're promoting a racing movie. And she would have rather had Jamie Lee Curtis play her, which, who could blame her?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Well, guys, we do have some breaking news to report here.
Oh. I was going to say. Yep,
do you want to say it on the count of three together?
Yeah.
All right. One. Two, three. Noah Gragson's going to Stuart Haas next year. It's official. He's the new Eric Almirola, folks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the best kept secret in all of motorsport.
Yeah.
No one saw it coming. Yeah. But yeah, a multi-year deal, apparently. So welcome back, Noah. Don't fuck this up.
Don't be dumb. Yeah. I wonder if Wendy's is going with him, or...
I have to imagine
Bass... Replacing one bacon with another bacon.
I have to imagine Bass Pro is, because even as of late, he's made some Bass Pro videos. Black Rifle, maybe.
Black Rifle, yeah.
You know, they don't seem to have any problem with his likes. yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Wendy's maybe, but I don't know. I feel like Wendy's probably not. I think Bass Pro and Black Rifle, their audience doesn't give a shit about what
they've already had a lot to do with Stuart Haas in the past with the smoke too. So I think it's that's probably a safe bet. But who knows what sort of brand new health provider or weird nondescript tech company will step in. Some sort of like lowercase Arial font to make his car look like dog shit and come in 36th place in. But best of luck to Noah. Probably should have gone there in the first place. That's Stuart Haas.
All right. Well, with that, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this show. Now, next week is going to be our last episode of the year. Yep. I mean, Christmas and New Year's are right around the corner. There's not a whole lot going on racing-wise. Going to be taking a few weeks off. We're probably going to return towards the end of January, after, what the hell, the Chili Bowl? Rob's going to that, so we'll have plenty to talk about there. And, maybe we'll pop in for a second if anything interesting happens or any interviews fall on our lap or whatever. But for next week, it's just going to be kind of a year-end wrap-up show. We're going to talk about some of our what our favorite races we went to, what we're looking forward to next year. The video of the week, it's gonna be pretty light fare, and we'd like to hear some feedback from this video. Basically, NASCAR Man, which is another one of the YouTube channels that I follow, they are another one that does a lot of great NASCAR history.
Yes.
They made a pretty short little 6-minute video featuring NASCAR related items that were in like Christmas catalogs throughout anywhere from the 50s up until I guess probably the 2000s. So just kind of a little slideshow of different things that I know there's definitely some stuff in there that I got as a kid that came from those catalogs. And what I'd like to ask of you listeners, write in with your favorite NASCAR or any racing related gift that you've gotten over the years. I think that'd be a fun exercise. Also too, if you want to talk about the favorite races you went to, by all means, you can share those with us.
Yep.
But yeah, it's just going to be a wrap up next year. This is our first season. Had a great time doing it, and we're definitely looking forward to next year, but we want to wrap it all up with a nice little bow before the year closes.
Absolutely. And we are coming back. There's no question about that.
Yes, 100%. So, So yeah, that'll be it for this trip to Applebee's. As always, you can follow us at Meet Me at Applebee's on Instagram, Meet Me at the Bees on Twitter. I am Speedway Screens, speedwaytsj.etsy.com. Still plenty of stuff there, even though if you buy something today, it probably won't make it to you by Christmas, but that's okay. Buy yourself a present anyways. Yeah. Ashley, what are you promoting?
Well, you know, over on Snake Mountain _ True Love, nothing. But I'll probably post a bunch of pictures that I took at the museums here in the next few days. So if you want to look at those.
And generally, anything True Love talks about on the show, she will post about it on Instagram with a lot of photos and more analysis, that sort of thing. It's always fun to...
Definitely snap happy with the camera. So
yeah, you can definitely maybe give it a couple weeks. It takes her a while sometimes. But
yeah, I'm a little slow. Meemaw's a little slow.
You can come up on... listen to the show along with those photos. You can kind of see what she's talking about sometimes. Yeah.
Real quick, too, Kenny, following up on the Kenny Wallace bad motherfucker, he just posted on Instagram that in like a couple days that reel has gotten like 67,000 views. And
I mean, it's
like
he's
all you got to do is say motherfucker. And that's
Brian was a lot of those engagement. Numbers.
Yeah, that's the logic behind this whole show.
Yeah.
I'm a bad motherfucker from a bad fucking town. Woo! Good morning, bitches.
How do you not love it? I follow Kenny seriously. Wallace. Yeah. Rob Motes _ unofficial. My band's called These Wild Plains. Also kind of taking the rest of the year off. Working on a record, all that stuff. Same as always. We will have some more shows to announce pretty soon, though. And there's a pretty exciting one that could or could not happen that I really can't say a damn thing about, but we might be playing at a pretty cool racetrack next year, so I'm very much looking forward
Tim
to
Duggar?
If that I am the new Tim Duggar. I am,
thank God.
As y'all know, I got laid off and I put in an application to be his surrogate, and I will be handling the Xfinity series. So imagine being the ARCA Tim Duggar. That's what I'm meant to be.
Hey, y'all got to start somewhere. So
that's true. Yeah, but yeah, we'll have some cool stuff to talk about. And as I've said, I'll be at the Chili Bowl. Actually, with that, looks like our good buddy Jay, a friend of the program, Jay Pennell, is also going to be popping in for a day or two since Gavin Bushell is going to be running. Hopefully, I didn't break any news there, but. Yeah, that's going to be fun. But like Brian said, we'll be back next week, and we'll have plenty to talk about. And again, it's crazy to me that the Christmas catalog is a thing that just doesn't exist anymore, because it loomed so large in so many young ones' childhoods here, or old ones now, I guess. But so much good shit in there. Think we lost? Did we lose Brian?
No, I'm here.
He's gone.
I'm right here. My mic's still working.
He was watching that Kenny Wallace video again.
Yeah. It's just joy. Little serotonin hits. Oh, man. But yeah, I suppose that's it.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, folks. Talk to you next week.